Hey everybody, it's Mark Pattison back again with another great episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding your way. And this week is another example of that, and a person who could have chosen door number one or door number two, and he took the right path. He is Sean Evangelista, and Sean is a 20-year Navy SEAL, and growing up was not a picnic for him. Moved around, was in abusive relationships from adults, not good, and he had to make a choice, really, of what type of person does he want to be, what kind of mentor does he want to be to other people in life, and he fought through it, and at the end of the day, he came through. He did serve our country. I respect him tremendously, and he's just a good dude living here in Sun Valley, so we had a great catch-up. And I did try to crack him a couple times as it relates to some Navy SEAL stories overseas. He was in three different deployments, and going in, actually was in multiple situations where there's a lot of action that you can only imagine. And just part of the SEAL code is just not to talk and reveal. He did not do that. And so he keeps things high level, but you know, he did put himself in harm's way. Many of his buddies were shot or killed, and you know, at the end of the day, he seems like he has survived that. Now he's got a thriving business here in the Valley. And again, just awesome to connect with him and find out a little bit more about his past, his story. So we go through all this stuff. Okay, so as it relates to myself, I am here in Sun Valley. This podcast is being dropped down on a Friday, and it is blowing snow here. It's been doing that a couple feet now, it seems like, for the last 3 or 4 days, and the roads are crazy. So I'm nestled in and broadcasting as we speak. Things that are new going on in my life. Again, I launched a e-learning course. You can find that at markpattisonnfl.com and on Finding Your Summit e-learning course. There are a couple books that you can check out. There's a free PDF. There's also a free assessment that you can check out and see where you are in life. If you want to elevate yourself, get yourself to the next level, or just do something crazy and insane but not sure how to go about doing that, like I did, climbing these mountains, you can find your way onto the assessment through Finding Your Summit. And there is a tab through mpnfl.com site that I just mentioned that you can find, okay? And what else? I love to peek at public speak. I've been doing that. It seems to be catching momentum. And again, it's just all about the journey. And I appreciate everybody out there right now that is either inviting me into their living room, they're listening to this pod, or is inviting me out to talk to their group. So with great gratitude, I always have doing these podcasts, and boy, it's been a blessing for me. As always, this pod is brought to you by VelatorBlueSkincare.com. Cynthia Besteman, she's a rock star. Great stuff. Okay, so on that note, let's go listen to Sean. Here we go. Bye. Hey everybody, it's Mark Pattison back again with another awesome episode of Finding Your Summit. And this week I am broadcasting live from my home studio here in Sun Valley, Idaho. And I have the honor of interviewing today Sean Evangelista. Sean, how you doing?
Great. Thanks for having me over, man.
Yeah, no, it's great.
I love your new house. It's killer.
No, it's awesome, right? It converts into a studio and a place people gather and everything else. But most importantly, I'm across the street from the mountain. And
I was just going to say, you're right next to the mountain.
I am 150 yards from the lift line. So
yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah, especially today, a day like today, is snowed 6 inches and all that stuff, and which we're going to get into here shortly. But listen, I for the audience that's out there, what I want to set this thing up quickly is that, you know, the first thing, the most important thing is I'm very honored to have you here and speaking with you. There's another fellow climber that I climbed with on Denali last May/June. He's a former military guy, and he said, hey, Mark, this is somebody that you definitely need to have in your pod. And by the way, he also lives here in Sun Valley. And so I checked you out. I'm like, God, this guy is badass. And what that means is that you 20 years as a Navy SEAL, and that's just huge. Anyways, thank you for serving our country to start. You guys are amazing. Without people like you, we wouldn't be free and have the kind of liberties that we do. Shout out to my buddy who I climbed with, and shout out to you for, you know, serving and just be, you know, being you.
Yeah, well, yep. Thanks, man.
Like, here you are.
I feel like I got most of the benefit out of the whole thing being in the military, honestly.
Yeah, well, look, at I'm always fascinated because, again, we're going to get into the whole Navy SEAL thing, and you were a SEAL for over 20 years, and what I want to get into is, you know, how you got there, but in route of getting there, you know, it always starts back with where we grew up and the motivations, especially since you went through BUDS, you went through and you passed all the different levels that you have to pass, and we'll get into that. But tell me about your childhood.
Yep. Yeah, growing up, born in San Francisco, downtown, and my dad, I was with my mom the whole time growing up. My dad was an addict, and he bailed on my mom and I when I was 3. And she tells me a story where she had 75 cents and we were at a payphone in San Francisco and she didn't know where she was going to stay, but she could call 3 people. So she called a friend and we ended up staying there. And then we couch surfed for a number of months where we were just kind of going from house to house. And she was a musician, a classical pianist, a soprano, an opera singer. She won a runner up at the Metropolitan Opera in New York one year. And that's pretty good. That's kind of like one of the marquee spots for classical, you know, singers, and you know. And then so she ended up marrying a guy in Hawaii. It was one of those situations where she married this guy, and then this is after we had left. Let me backtrack a little bit. So we'd bounced around San Francisco for a lot, and then she got an opportunity for a singing gig out in Hawaii. And it was with the Jim Nabors show some people.
Gomer Pyle.
Listening, Gomer Pyle. Totally. And he's a singer. Like, a lot of people don't know that. And he ran a show in Waikiki for a long time, actually. And so she went out for the audition for a 2-week gig. He liked her so much, he said, "Hey, would you like to be my second on stage on a regular show, 2 shows a night, 4 or 5 nights a week or something like that?" And she's like, "Oh my goodness, we're moving to Hawaii." She's like, "Absolutely." Yeah. So we moved there, and then she ended up getting married maybe a year or two after we had moved there, and I was like 5-6 years old. And then she married a kind of a crazy guy. He seemed like okay at first, but beat her up all the time. And they're only married for 6 months, and it was super abusive. And I think you start remembering things when you're 5 or 6 years old. Like, because I remember being in the house with him. Yeah. He would beat her, punch her, and be, she was screaming all the time. And that was, when you're little, you just start like, okay, I guess this is what life is like. So you don't really have another example. And another thing that kind of happened too was she was, working her ass off trying to make ends meet. And so she'd have to get people to watch me at night because most of the singing jobs were at night.
Or at night, yeah.
Yeah. And so I'd get dropped off at houses, and she would drop me off at this one house all the time. And there was this, the kid, I think it was, he's maybe 8 years older than me, way older than me, bigger kid. And then and he started molesting me in the house, and I kept telling my mom, "I don't want to go back there," but I didn't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
And so, you don't know what kind of effect it has on you. All you know is you just start kind of getting into this dark sort of place as a kid, but you don't know what to do with it. You know? So you start your personality starts to take on these, I don't know, sort of negative feelings, and you stop trusting people. And, It gets heavy. And then we ended up escaping one day because he kind of lost his mind, and picks me up, throws me on the table, and says, "Okay, well, if you're going to leave me, we're going to split him in half. You take one half, I'll take the other." And he puts me up, pulls his kitchen knife out. My mom's obviously freaking out. She grabs me. We didn't even pack anything. We just got in the car and drove away. I think she had time to grab her purse. And so we took off, and then she had a friend through one of her singing things that kind of hit us.
And wait a minute, how old are you when this happens?
I think I was about 7, yeah. 7 years old.
Defining moment in your life.
Yeah.
Crazy.
And so a little nuts, And at that point, that's a good time for kids, I think, to be kind of identifying who their heroes are, who they want to be like. But for me at that point in time, it was just chaos. And so I had my friends and everything, but I started having problems at school, And, you know, I was acting out. I was, like, biting people, and I was getting in trouble all the time, and my grades weren't good. I don't know if they would have been good anyway, but I don't think this the things that were happening were helping. We hid for a while, and then some friends had hit us because this guy was, like, tracking us down. Like, he was kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Not kind of. He was crazy.
Yeah.
And so she ended up – that ended up sort of, like, going away after a while, after, I think, 2 years or something. And then she met who's my stepdad now, Paul, and he was in the Army. He was in the 25th Infantry Division. And he was different than any guy I'd ever met. And so this guy was in the 25th ID. He was a LERP in Vietnam, like he was long-range reconnaissance patrol, and he was in the infantry a long, long time.
Yeah.
And he was like the most stable man or male figure I'd ever met. And I'm like, this guy's like, he's in, and he took care of us, and they ended up getting married. And like, I still love this guy to this day. And he's still alive. He's got cancer right now. Just talked to him today, actually. And so that started to form inside of my head. I think looking back, like, okay, so that is what stability looks like. That's what strength looks like. And so I started to identify with that. And then so I started asking him stories like, what's the military like? Like, what do you do? And back then, there wasn't all the, you know, the social media, and there wasn't as much, you know, information out there about it. So we kind of had to, like, you had to talk to people, and you had to read books. And so he would, you know, he would tell me stories, not like gnarly stories or anything like that, but just about, like, you know, like, what'd you do at work today? And it was so interesting to me. So I started to be really interested in that, because I was like, this is the first, like, I guess it made me feel secure, right? Like having, I'm like, finally, I feel secure now in my family. I feel like I'm protected. And so, like, having that protection feeling, it was like the best feeling. And I'm like, I want to be like that. I want to protect people. I don't know what that is, but I want to do that. I want to be a part of that. I want to figure out what that means.
So where are you guys now? So we're
still in Honolulu.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're still in Honolulu, and mom's still singing. They're married, and dad's still in the 25th ID. And then, it changed my life. Like, her meeting him completely turned my life around and like refocused me on things that weren't, you know, so dark it gave me direction. It was like literally a light at the end of the tunnel. Like, oh my goodness, there is a direction you can go in. That's good. Not everything's terrible. We ended up, he ended up getting orders to the Presidio, you know, in downtown San Fran. It's basically downtown San Fran. Yeah. I mean, that spot is amazing. So we went and got stationed there, and, I think we were there for 2 years or something like that. And then we went to Georgia, and then he retired, and then we went to Maryland. And the whole time, though, I was building up. Once I met Paul and my stepdad, I started to just read books about the military, and that became what I thought I needed to be. I needed to be something strong and something able to protect myself and able to protect others, because there were a lot of those times where I didn't feel protected. Well, we moved to Georgia. When we got to Georgia...
Now, so you're moving around because he's in the military.
Yeah,
and so
exactly.
You're a military brat, essentially.
Yeah,
right?
I became a military brat. And so we get to Georgia, and I joined the Boy Scouts there, and that was all great until the assistant scoutmaster. The first time I ever get drunk, we're in Georgia. Assistant scoutmaster convinces my parents, like, hey, we're got a camping trip tomorrow. We got to get an early start, so we're going to have the boys over. Me and my buddy Jack, we go over to this assistant scoutmaster's house, and it's in a trailer park in Georgia. And we get there, and the first thing he does is like, hey, you guys want something to drink? And you know, we're like just into the Boy Scouts, like, like 13, I think 12, something like that. And hands us these drinks, but they're Jack and Cokes. I'd never been drunk before, and I'd never drank before, and these are strong drinks. He's like, it tastes strong, but just keep drinking. And then he puts porn on the TV, and I'm like, what is the deal? Like, really? I'm like, And so we get really drunk. I end up getting, and then he started pulling, you know, he was trying to get me individually, trying to take us back by ourselves back into his bedroom. And he did. And then I started getting sick. I got alcohol poisoning the first time. And so then I felt that whole feeling again, everything came back. And I'm like, you can't trust anybody.
Yeah.
Like there's devils everywhere.
So is that one of those things that you're at this point where you could go back, and now that you were trusting your stepdad, could you go back and confide in him?
No, I never told him. It was such a shameful thing. Cause why didn't I stand up for myself? I'm not a baby.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And you're what, eighth grade at this point?
Yeah, I guess seventh, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think seventh.
So now you move into high school,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
You're getting in fights and yeah, you know, it's getting kind of rough,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And so ultimately the somebody in your high school, I assume, puts you in a program called Scared Straight.
Yeah.
So I've heard about these things where yeah, people like yeah. in the middle of the night, they come in like, you know, ninjas, right? And they just like grab you. I mean, you've got like a toothbrush
like,
and that's it.
It wasn't like the dramatic TV version of that. Because yeah. I think there was a couple TV shows like called Scared Straight, and it wasn't the brand Scared Straight. But I had a guidance counselor and I was getting suspended all the time, getting fights. And he's like, hey, I want you to, you know, kind of get this program and, you know, you're going to go talk to these prisoners. So I get on this, you know, we get these counseling sessions and then we get on this bus and I look on the bus and it's all the bad kids from high school in the bus. I mean, all the yeah. kids are getting suspended, fought, getting expelled. Like it was just the troubled kids. And then we go to the Jessup State Penitentiary in Maryland and we go inside and we sit down at the table with, you know, hardened felons.
Yeah.
And they tell us, you better stop doing what you're doing because you're going to end up in here. And let me tell you, your life will be ruined. And
yeah.
you guys, and all you kids, from what we heard, you guys are on the path that I was on.
Well, I mean, I'm sure I don't know what it is, of course, but there's some common link in terms of the whole childhood of growing up and mentorships and people abusing them or in unstable family situations yeah. that just was making all you guys just lash out in some kind of way.
Right. Yeah.
And now you don't have any, I don't think you're playing any sports, so you don't really have any organization that's pulling you, and there's nothing worse, as you know, for a teenager than idle time.
Yeah, no, the one thing I did have, I didn't have organized sports in high school, but I rock climbed a lot. I got really, like, I immersed myself in rock climbing, mm-hmm. and I just started climbing all the time, and then, like, that's all I cared about. Like, and I didn't have, like, in high school, I didn't have pictures of, you know, ball players on my wall. I had pictures of Mark Twight, Free Solo and Ice Walls and Chamonix.
Right.
And because that to me was the most awesome thing. I did play 3 weeks of lacrosse though.
Yeah.
My guidance counselor, he said, hey, I'd like you, the same guy who put me on the bus to go see, talk to the prisoner. He's like, hey, I want you to he was an assistant coach on the lacrosse team. He was like, name was Gary Ahrens. Awesome guy. I've talked to him since then too. I thanked him for it. Really helped me. He's the only teacher's name I remember from high school, really. Mm. Yeah. But yeah, he got me on the lacrosse team for 3 weeks, and I was out there playing, and I definitely wasn't the best because I hadn't grown up playing lacrosse or those kind of sports, so I definitely wasn't the worst, but I ran all the time, and I climbed all the time, so I was in really good shape. And here comes the principal about 3 weeks into it. He's like, Mr. Evangelista, come over here. And I'm like, okay, what? I was trying to think of something I did that week. And he's like, unfortunately, your GPA isn't high enough to play interscholastic sports. Go put your stuff back in the gym. So I went and put my stuff back, went home, and smoked a bowl.
Yeah, I mean, look, sometimes, you know, educators can be such blockheads and understand those rules, and they're trying to motivate you, like, that's really what you want to do, but actually it turns and goes the other way.
Right.
And it's the worst thing you can do.
Right.
You want to bring them in and bring them closer.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think my, you know, Gary, he was bummed about it because he was trying to help me and get me some structure and some focus, you know what I mean? And I thank him for that. And then I just went back and I just started climbing. I kept climbing. And that rock climbing was my thing. That's what I care about. And also, like, trying to climb Mount Washington. You know, we tried it all 4 years.
This is on the East Coast in Vermont?
New Hampshire.
New Hampshire, okay.
Yeah. It's like, it's kind of like they call it the biggest little mountain in the world, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty gnarly up there. They had the highest recorded wind speed for a while until they got beaten in Antarctica.
Yeah. And which I'll be at next month.
yeah, I know. That's awesome, dude. That's
yeah,
killer.
Yeah, that's going to be great. All right, so because now you go back to your stepdad, and he's a Army officer, and now you graduate from high school,
yep.
and now your next path is to...
Well, so when I was in high school, I was always split. I was either training for SEALs or some commando, you know. In other words, I was going to try to become a Green Beret, go for SEALs or Marine Recon or something like that.
Yep.
Or I was going to move to the mountains and become a mountaineer and just climb. Yep. And so my parents, for high school graduation, my present was they sent me to Knowles, the Alaska Mountaineering Course. And we ended up going into the Chugach in Alaska. So I, it was like last day of high school, go to graduation, party all night, wake up, I'm like on a 7 a.m. flight to Alaska, hungover, just going to a mountaineering school. And I was stoked about it. And I still at that point didn't know what I was going to do. 2 weeks into it, we're on the glacier. And then I just, I just woke up one morning and I knew what I was going to do. And I'm like, I'm going to go try to make it through Buds.
Yeah.
The mountains will be here, but I need to go try this.
So how do you do that? So for anybody who's thinking about this, I'm thinking about it, but I'm not going to do it. I might be too little. I might have aged out. But if you want to go do that, like, tell me what is entailed in making that happen.
So basically you, the logistics of it, like the paperwork version is you just go to what you go to a recruiter and go to the Navy and say, I want to get a SEAL contract. And it looks a little different now than it did before, but basically it's sort of the same. You can get a contract, and all the contract says is that they're not going to ship you off to Korea when you're instead of going to like SEAL training.
Yeah.
So they say, as long as you pass everything and your discipline's good, you don't have like an alcohol related incident, and you can pass all the physical standards and all the written tests, we will continue to put, you will stay in the pipeline to become a SEAL.
Right.
And so I signed up for that. And it was a 6-year.
And also, as I understand it, BUDS is the training camp, but you're not a full fledged SEAL. Mm-mm. You're not like going off to Somalia or someplace, right? You just need to pass that, which is a huge accomplishment.
Yeah, it's basic underwater demolition SEAL training. It's 6 months long, and there's like, I don't know, 10,000 books out about it now. It's like it's everywhere. But at the time, no one knew what it was. Like in high school, people were like, "What, the SEALs? Like, what is that? Is that like divers?" I'm like, "Kind of. It's like commando stuff." But yeah, so I decided to do that, and I was so motivated, like kind of like super like intense. When we got off the glacier in Knowles, I tried to enlist in Anchorage. I was like, I'm ready to go now. Like I don't need to go back to Maryland.
Yeah.
You know, I'll go now. But the recruit, I went into the recruiter's office in Anchorage. He's like, well, you're not a resident here, so you have to actually go back home first. And I was like, okay, I'm just like an ADD motivated kid that wants to get to the next level.
Well, and highly motivated, right?
Yeah.
So side story, and this has nothing to do with what you're doing, but it does. And that is, today I just ironically, they were having this, you know, 20 or 30 year show on ESPN about when Buster Douglas beat Mike Tyson. Mm. And he was a 42-1 odds, and they call it still today. I mean, they like Miracle on Ice is up there, but certainly, you know, his fight, you know, they're saying for sure in the world of boxing, professional boxing, this might be the greatest victory of all time. And so the common thread that might be parallel to what you're talking about is Buster Douglas, who is just he had all kinds of talent, but he didn't have all this different kind of motivation. And so his mom had died like, you know, 26 days before the actual fight. And because it was Mike Tyson, in those days, he was a human wrecking ball. They had it in the Tokyo arena or dome, whatever they call it. And he went out there and he just, on that particular night, in that moment, he was uber motivated for a multiple, you know, because of his dad, because of his mom just passed away, and because what people were saying about him.
Yeah.
And that's what drove him to the other side. And then all these other fights, you know, his career went down. But in that moment, his motivation was so strong, it prevailed, you know, him in that fight.
Yeah. It's almost like you become singular minded.
Yeah.
Where you cut out anything and everything that's dead weight, that's preventing you from getting to a single goal. And I get that. Yeah, totally. And it feels like in that mindset, it almost feels like you're being an asshole or you're being rude, or because that's all you talk about, that's all you care about. And that's, you know, you try to balance it out and like, yeah, you want to have balance. But I think to do great, like super great things like that, like you kind of got to be a little obsessed.
No,
to accomplish. You know the deal. You played for 5 years in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, look at you. You know, unfortunately, at least for me, when, you know, college and professional sports, you have to be selfish, and part of that is that you can't lose your edge.
Totally.
And you've always got it because everybody's trying to knock you off the block.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Crazy. Okay, so now you get through BUDS.
Yep.
Right. And now on your first try, which is huge.
Yeah.
And now you go on to what? Where? How does that work? How do the stations? What? How do you land on a certain?
So then, like they basically they give you a sheet and they say like, hey, write down your top three choices of like what team you want to go to, and then but they're ultimately just going to put you where the Navy
and
needs you.
Okay, so tell me that, you know, you hear a lot about SEAL Team 6 and all this stuff. So tell me about what's the difference between, I mean, I'm not saying literally, but between 3 and 4 and 5 and 7 and, I mean, what's the difference?
Well, there's just like two coasts. Like the odd number teams are on the West Coast and the even number teams are on the East Coast. And okay. They all have basically the same type of mission. And there's like all these different mission sets and all these requirements that come down from the Defense Department of what commandos are going to do. Are they going to go kind of do a Green Beret type mission, or are they going to go train some people, you know, in a different country? And there's definitely a major difference between the pre 9/11 days and the post 9/11. Cause like the first half of my career was pre 9/11. The second half was
crazy.
Post 9/11.
Yeah.
You know, they're like two totally different like eras and two totally different like experiences, the pre 9/11, the post 9/11. And then, so you've got like the basic SEAL teams, and like they perform a lot of like the, I don't know, without getting too deep into it, they do a lot of like the not super specialized and not super niche missions, whereas you got like the tier one elements that are kind of niche, and they specialize in executing certain types of missions.
Okay, so what were you? This podcast is brought to you by Laird Superfoods. Let me tell you, these creamers are so amazing. They're super tasty, super delicious, and what they are is whole natural food ingredients mixed into these creamers. And I'm telling you, when you put this stuff into your drink, this powder substance, it is amazing. And their whole tagline is all about fueling your journey. You cannot go and actually power your way up a mountain, be in the pool, ride a big wave, unless you're properly fueled. And these guys are doing it all the right way. So where can you find this? At LairdSuperfood.com. And here's the kicker. If you use the code name MarkP20, that's MarkP20, you're going to get 20% off on your first order. So check it out. LairdSuperfood.com.
Types of missions.
Okay, so what were you?
I start, everybody starts out in the like the regular number teams. And then if you want to go to team six, then you submit an application and you sit in front of a board and you do an interview. And if they like your package and if they like you, then they offer you a chance to come to selection. And when you go to selection, then you're starting kind of you're not starting at the bottom again, but you kind of are a little bit like, yeah. You show up as a new guy, like, you know, nothing. And
you got to prove your wings, man.
Yeah. And so you're like, you're stepping it up again. You
okay.
Know?
So you end up on what team?
I went to SDV1, my first team. I went to Hawaii. I got stationed in Hawaii.
Okay, so now you're in Hawaii.
Wet submersibles, like a little submarine.
So you're on SEAL Team 1,
mm-hmm. Right? No. SDV Team 1, SEAL Delivery Vehicle Team 1.
Okay, so what's that mean?
Wet submersibles. Think like mini submarines that fit like a couple dudes in them, but there's no like pressurized, like you're not dry in there. This is a wet, like it's a fiberglass door. Like you're in there breathing on like scuba tanks and stuff.
Yeah, no, I got it. Yeah. The full James Bond stuff. Yeah. So, okay. So you're deployed and you're in Somalia and you're in Afghanistan and then you're in Iraq.
That's all post 9/11 stuff.
It's all post.
Yeah, before that, we'd gone to Southeast Asia and all that, and South America, but nothing like the post 9/11 world.
So can you talk about any of this stuff?
A little bit.
Yeah.
I guess a little bit. Yeah. Yeah. Without giving away too much, but.
Yeah. I mean, so I guess what I'm trying to get at is if you can give me either real or hypothetical type mission that you would go on and conflict that you would get in terms of, you know, in order to extract this person or do whatever, you know, there is some stuff that was going to go down.
Yeah. So, the post 9/11 era, I was at, development group, SEAL Team 6. And so our mission was different had I been in another team. Like a lot of like the Green Beret units and the SEAL teams and the, you know, Marine Recon, they have similar mission sets and they're a little bit different, but like they'll go in, get a bunch of people together and build up an army. Like they'll give people skills and they'll train them up so that they can defend their village, so that like in Iraq, you know, you don't have non-Iraqis coming in doing home invasions. These people are coming in from Saudi Arabia and doing home invasions and saying, hey, you guys are going to take care of us and you're not going to tell anyone we're here. And if you do, we're going to kill your whole family. Yeah. Like home invasions are huge. And so they would go in and just like try to build up little armies that can protect their village or that can also start throwing out the, you know, like let's say Afghanistan, the Taliban, you know, like the Northern Alliance, like they were fighting the Taliban before we even showed up. Like they don't want any part of what the Taliban's got going on. So that's what those types of units were doing. What we would do is we would go and mitigate threats, like get rid of key players that are out there causing trouble. And a lot of times it was going to protect like girls that are going to school. and we, you know, you find out, hey, there's they're gonna drive a truck in next to the school tomorrow, and they're gonna vaporize the school while it's in session because there's girls in there that are getting an education.
Awful.
So we would go, oh, okay, well, that's not gonna happen. We're gonna stop those guys. So we would go and deal with those guys.
What was the best part about being a SEAL?
The working alongside like really high caliber people. I mean, I know you can relate. I mean, you played for the Raiders and a number of other teams. Like being around that, like that level of people that are kind of like the same. Like they're like you, right? You find your people when you get there. They have similar backgrounds to you. Like kind of troubled kids. They were going to I spent a lot of time in DC going to punk shows and and you're like, oh dude, I'm like you, and you have these common backgrounds and you all find each other together, and you also find that it's kind of okay to have that. To get to that point, had to have been a little bit selfish, a little single minded, like obsessed, like
you got
focused.
The edge, right?
Yeah, to get there.
Yeah.
And so you meet those people and you start to feel good. You're like, okay, there are other people like me. I'm not fucking crazy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Working with guys, I think that was the best thing.
Yeah. I mean, you hear this all the time in the whether it's college or the NFL, where it's about the locker room, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I've had obviously, a boatload of experiences on the field, in practice, during games, but it's really the relationships that you formed in the locker room that carried over to we went to the Rose Bowl multiple times and going out with the fellas and hanging out and doing this and that and lifting weights and going through the blood, the sweat, the tears that you really miss, because then once you get away like I am now, we're both here in Sun Valley. But it's that community that with that common bond and singular goal of what you guys are trying to accomplish kind of goes away. Of course, you're going to go see your buddies and talk to them on the phone here and there, but it's not that same, mission that you're going to. So the worst part about being a SEAL is probably stepping away from the whole thing.
No, exactly. You just took the words out of my mouth, is leaving it.
Yeah.
Because when you leave it, you're like, oh, it'll be okay. It'll be good. And then you start realizing it'll never be like that again. You're never going to operate with a group of people like that, just like that again. You can get close. And so what do? We start hunting for it again, right?
Yeah.
It's like, what did you do when you left the NFL? Now you're climbing the seven summits. You're going after it, right? Like
I don't take out people.
No, I know, but it's the same thing. Like,
no, I know. You're shifting. You're transferring that energy from one thing to the other.
Yeah. Because you became a person that enabled you to get to the Oakland Raiders into the NFL. And I became a person that enabled me to get. And it's not like you can turn that off. So when it goes away, you've already built your machine. You've built your mindset and your body. It's already built and you can't discard it. And so when you step away from it, you're just standing there and you're an engine that's hungry, and you got to find something else, because you can only drink margaritas on the beach for about 2 days, 3 days tops.
No,
and
you're crazy.
And then you're kind of over it. You know what I mean? Like, you got to go after something that's going to challenge you and then feel like a new guy again.
So what would you say to anybody who's listening that, from your standpoint of, again, you find that thing that you're passionate about, and then you're trying to reshift that purpose and go find something else. Do you have any strategies? 1, 2, 3. Yeah. I mean, for me, and I'll give you an example.
Okay.
One thing that really has helped me in my life in terms of where I am today, and I forgot about it for a period of time, and that's the period of time that I was a little bit lost here about 7, 8 years ago. But John Wooden taught something called the Pyramid of Success, which are essentially 25 different blocks of individual and team goals, which ultimately lead you to the pinnacle of whatever you're trying to do. In their case, it was winning basketball championships at UCLA. And then our coach, Don James, who's a Hall of Fame coach, interpreted it for us. And rather than us trying to go to the NCAA, just the playoffs, the bracket, and then ultimately win the NCAA, we're trying to win the national championship and the Pac-10 in those days and the Rose Bowl and those things. So it's different for everybody, but I've used a lot of those principles to really help me channel that in terms of what I'm doing with the mountains and my training, my climbing, and all those things that I do. Mm-hmm. For you, what has that been?
So after leaving, I think there's a period you have to go through. Well, I did anyway. When I left it, we had, I lost a lot of friends, you know what I mean? And we had a helicopter get shot down in 2011, August 6, 2011, Extortion 17 got hit. Those were my teammates. And I knew some of those guys for over a decade. And then I went through a divorce. And so like when I left, it was like I lost my family, and like one third of my friends were gone. And I was like, I'm just going to go to the mountains. And I wasn't in a position mentally to decide to attack anything again. I had to get healthy again. I had to heal up, mentally mostly, you know, and so moving out and changing my environment made a difference. And then, once I got comfortable, I started to heal, and I started like a lot of that weight came off of me. Uh-huh. Then the first thing I would say, the number one thing, and you had like your three, I said, then the first thing was like, I'm like, okay, I need to, my ego needs to find a new home a little bit. Right. So I can't sit there, and I didn't want to, I don't want to rely on, hey, I did this one thing that everyone's heard of. And like, yeah, you played in the NFL and I was a SEAL, but it's like, that's over with. That's done. It's gone. It's in the past. Like there's nothing. I'm like, yeah, I did it. Okay. What's next? And so moving forward and feeling like a new guy again and trying something new and like, you know, you learning from people that you didn't even know that would come across in your life, and listening to them and just feeling like a complete newbie. And like, and so the ego takes a little bit of a dinger, you know, I'm sure, like, I mean, mountaineering, your ego takes dingers all the time.
Well, actually going back to exactly what you said, I mean, we have more common bonds than you know, in that transition, not just for me, but well, I would say the same thing for military, you know, people, and people who have played in professional sports is you essentially go off the cliff.
Yeah.
And you know, the difference with military is you can, I think, kind of choose when you want to end that career, and with it, when you're done in professional sports, they're just like done with you and they throw you out, right? And so then you're trying to figure out like, how are you going to transfer that energy into something positive that's going to give you that same buzz? And for it took me a long time to really like get that. And then, you know, ultimately you transitioned into business, and business now has led me into the mountains just like you, and I had to get my mind clear too, and that's what led me to my first mountain down in Tanzania in Kilimanjaro, and now here I find myself in Sun Valley with you, right? And are these two worlds come together?
Yeah,
which is amazing. But it's that whole thing that you're talking about, which is really a transition of energy with your mindset in the right place, so that you can go attack something with that same vigor that you had on becoming a SEAL, but in something else that's not necessarily, you know, battling people.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, like waiting, like if you wait too long because you're going to attack something else when you're done with the seven summits, there's going to be something else. You're not done.
Well, I'm going to the North Pole.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah. You're going with me.
Yeah. Right on. I mean, you know what I mean? Like there's going to be something else, but deciding when to attack is, I think having some of that turmoil in the background is a good driver. I almost like, if I had to go back and like restructure my life and create like a perfect life, I would definitely inject some traumatic turmoil of like tumultuous events in there, because and I could be wrong, and I'm no psychologist, and there's probably a psychologist out there that can dissect what we're talking about right now, yeah, totally, but I can't. But I would inject some trouble times in there, because it's always in my head. It's like part of that. It's like I always think about it. It's kind of weird. This gets a little weird, but I always think about it as like an engine. Like there's an engine churning in there, and part of the fuel of that is the things from the past that have like scarred me or made me feel bad, or that really shocked me sort of, or like made me feel uncomfortable. And that is part of the fuel. And I psychologically picture that literally as fuel to an engine. Like I'm plugging in those rods and I'm feeding off of that. I know it sounds nuts, but
no,
that's kind of what I literally think. Like I started to think like that.
No, I don't think that's crazy at all. I mean, you look at the guys, you know, the kids who are super entitled, it's really hard for them to get super motivated about whether it's school or sports or something else. And, you know, you see a lot of kids from the inner city that, you know, ultimately go on and do well, and I'm just taking sports right now, but do well in sports just because they have no other option. And they've got their eye on some mentor, you know, Magic Johnson or somebody that's been great at their, right now it's LeBron, That's done phenomenal. And again, I'm just picking on sports right now, but I think, you know, you always need to come from motivation, and I still have mine, right? And it came out of a dark place. Even when I was playing football, it was always, you know, trying to, you know, play and play in a way that I could compete with all the big boys, because there were so many new guys coming in all the time and every year on scholarship or in the NFL that you were just one whisper away from being cut and being blown out. And I knew that. And so I don't know if this is a positive thing or a negative thing, but this whole concept around fear of failure has always driven me.
Oh, yeah. Huge.
And the psychologist, the optimist might say it in a different way, and like, hey, you need to switch that around. But it just hasn't fueled me in that way. And that's also where I've got to where I am today. So for you, let's go back to one of the things that you said where after you got out of the Navy, Navy SEALs, then you really had to get your mind right and your body, you know, and everything healed up. And so you also decided to retreat to the mountains. So how did you find Sun Valley?
I was going to move to, when I left for Alaska, when I was a senior in high school, I had two choices. I was going to go and try to make it through SEAL training and give it a shot, or I was going to move to Jackson Hole, because at the time, this is like 1991, 92, Jackson Hole was like, it was always out there. I was like, this is where the extreme skiing and snowboarding's happening.
It's cool.
Like,
I was there last weekend.
I saw you. I was tracking on the Book of Face.
So Jackson Hole is.
So I was thinking about Jackson, and I started looking at real estate prices in Jackson. I'm like, oh man, maybe. Okay, let me look somewhere else. So I started looking at North Lake Tahoe, and I had been out there, and I liked it out there. So I'm like, okay, well, I'll move to Truckee. I can buy a house in Truckee. Yeah. I can afford it, and I'll just go to Truckee. So there was a rep from Smith Optics out to our team just about a year and a half before I retired, and he had all these skiing stickers on his laptop, and he had ski goggles and ballistic eye protection that stops some fragmentation, and he was, you know, he's out there with his sales kit, and I'm like, oh, do you ski? And he's like, yeah, I ski. Live in Sun Valley. I'm like, oh, okay, where's that? And Idaho. And I had kind of heard of it before, but I was like, Sun Valley, Idaho. Okay. Yeah. He's like, let me show you some videos. And so we started talking. I'm like, well, he's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, well, I want to move to the mountains. And he's like, where are you going to move? I'm like, well, I'm going to move to Truckee. He's like, why are you moving to Truckee? Who do you know there? I'm like, I don't know anyone in Truckee. I've just been there before, and there's some mountains there. Yeah. And so that's where, and he's like, you should come out and check out Sun Valley. And I'm like, okay. And so I came out here, and the first day I was here, I was like, oh, yeah, I'm moving here. This place is
magical.
No, it's terrible. No one moved here. It's awful.
It's like Detroit. but here's the one thing I love about the story is that you came out here and you really didn't know how to ski. But your goal, again, reshifting that energy into something positive, was that you wanted to become a ski patrol.
Right. And the reason was, is because I could have easily bought a ski pass and just throw my headphones on and just go party ski every day and just do my own thing. But I was looking for a community. I want to be a part of a team again, you know, and that's what I was missing. And so I started meeting some patrollers, and I was like, oh, you're on the actual ski patrol. And I'd never met ski patrollers before.
Yeah.
And so that's what I wanted. I'm like, I want to get good enough to be on the ski patrol. And people started asking me, like, my first 2 years I was here, like, what are you doing today? I'm like, training. I'm like, oh, really? What are you training for? I'm like, I'm training for ski patrol. I'm like, what does that entail? I'm like, I'm going skiing. I want to go ski. I'm going to go ski until my legs get out.
Well, and I think you need to know how to ski to be a ski patrol.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So I met some great guys here, like, you know, Waylon Barrett. He taught me how to ski. I started out on the wedge over on Dollar Mountain. Yeah. Dollar Mountain, for those that don't know, it's like our smaller mountain. It's for beginners, but it also has all the slope style. So there'll be dudes doing 60-foot airs and double backflips, but right next to, like, a little magic carpet ride, literally.
No, I've seen it.
Yeah. And so that was my goal. I wanted to be on a team again. And I knew it wouldn't be exactly like what I had before, but I wanted it to be close. And I also wanted to, it feels good to, like, help people. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you see people hurt on the mountain. It feels good to, like, help someone, you know, with the twist of their ankle on the mountain and get them down the hill, or someone breaks their leg. And so you got the team environment, you have a mission, and having a mission was key for me. I wanted a mission. And just like you, it's key for you. You have a mission. Like, you're going for the seven summits. You have to be attacking. Because if you're not, what are we doing?
Well, you know what I mean? It's a purpose.
Yeah.
Right?
Totally. Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome. So now you've been a patrol for...
This is my third, start of my third year.
Okay. Yep. So, and you're loving it still? It's all good?
Yeah. It's awesome.
So I saw this great video too of you and it showed, and some other guys on your ski patrol were talking about, but one of the things you've been really skilled at and useful is beyond just going and saving people, but also when it comes to avalanche control, you're the guy, you know, using the demolition and firing these bombs. You know, I'm sure you've
I'm
shot a few things in your day.
Yeah, I'm the assistant under a guy, Ted Tuma, and they let me go in there. I asked them, like, hey, can I help out with that? Because, you know, I gave them a little bit of my background. They're like, yeah, sure, go hop under Ted, and he'll show you how we do things. And going into that, like, yes, we do have things that blow up, but the mission is different. The handling is basically the same. There's like principles of handling explosives, but the application of it's really different. So, you know, in the military, we're just like, you blow a door open, and as long as the door's open, job done. Whereas here, it's like when we set explosives off, people are going to ski that.
Yeah.
So it's not like you can just go, that's good enough. We got through the door. We're in. It doesn't matter. The mission accomplished. It's like, there's going to be like 2,000 people skiing this. Yeah. Like, we need to make sure this is good to go. So you're more concerned about who's going to come after you. And there's going to be a lot of people coming down there after you. And they're going to look at you if you don't get it right. And there was definitely the pressure in the military. It's just different. It's just different here being in that environment.
Well, it's kind of like you jumping on a plane a little bit, that you have blind faith that the pilot is competent. That's going to get you to point A to B. And just like when I go on the mountain, I'm blind faith that you guys are out there going to make the slope safe.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, totally. Because once you're in the confines of the ski resort, like, it's literally the mentality. Everyone goes, oh, I'm in bounds. Everything is safe. I mean, there was a slide, I don't know how many, that number's not exactly right, but 7 people caught on an inbound slide in Jackson last week. Inbounds.
Yeah.
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 So it's
I heard about that.
It's never 100%.
Yeah. The guy I was skiing with is a ski patrol too.
Okay.
You know, in Jackson Hole. So he was talking about that. Okay. So the other place that you have put your energy, and I think it sounds like it's taken off, is an apparel company called 30 Seconds.
Yeah. 30 Seconds Out.
30 Seconds Out. Yeah. Tell me about it.
Yeah. So just my first job out of the military, I worked for Alpine Tree Service here in the town just because I needed to do something. I needed to start an income.
Yeah.
And so I started. Pat Rainey, the CEO of that company, put me on the crane crew, and he taught me how, and the other guys there taught me how to drive a 30-ton crane. We're running chainsaws, dragging logs, and it was just good physical labor. And going back to that sort of like that healing, that mental space I needed to be in, it was perfect. Just manual, hard labor. At the end of every day, I was soaked in sweat. My shirt was crusty from salt, and I felt good at the end of every day. Because while you're working and you're doing that, and it's a pretty dangerous environment, actually. Like, it's pretty dangerous. You're not thinking about all the other things that are dragging you back, or the setbacks you've recently had, or the losses. Like, you just care about the moment and being an asset and not being a liability. And even, you know, being on the tree crew, I don't want to be a liability. I want to be an asset to these guys. So it takes you out of that. And at the end of the day, I think for me, physically doing things for me is very good. I can't do an office. I can't sit in an office and be in front of a computer all day long. I can do it for a little while. I can do it for about an hour to 3 hours. And then after that, I got to go do something. I need to get the blood pumping.
So, but how did that transition into your apparel company? So you start off with this
like, so I started, so it's funny with this football thing, right? So I started seeing, like, my first idea was like, watching football, watching sports. I'm like, man, what these guys are doing is awesome. I'm like, but if they were to, like, put on video what we did overseas, it would blow your mind. Like, you know, some of the firefights and some of the, like, the stuff going on was kind of nuts. And I'm like, there's got to be like a middle of the road here where we show some of our cool stuff, but without giving away the whole thing and getting super detailed and giving away our exact tactics and all that, which I'll never do. But so I started just, like, messing around with pop art, and I was a Banksy fan. He's like a street artist guy. Some of you guys probably know who he is. And a fan of Shepherd Fairey. Not a fan of the politics, but I'm a fan of their take on the world and how they approach problems through art. And so I started experimenting with some of that. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to throw some of the stuff on stickers and shirts. And and see if it works. And it started working, and I'm like, oh, this is fun. Let's do this. And so I just keep doing it. Now I bring on guest artists, and someone asked me what I do. Like, what do you do besides Ski Patrol? I'm like, I sell t-shirts on the internet, but it does really well. And that's a whole nother challenge, you know, as opposed to like, being in the military or going to sports is figuring out business. And I consume podcasts and audiobooks all the time, because each one I listen to, I realize I know less than I thought I knew. Yeah. And so I'm like, oh, I got to learn more. And you just keep, and so I just consume knowledge about it, because I don't have a business degree.
Yeah. Well, if you're not growing, you're dying.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. So I'm just consuming information, and I'm doing it right now. Like today, I'm listening to an audiobook on the way over here and trying to figure out how to do business better. And so for me, like my obsession, I guess, right now, as far as making a living is concerned, besides my girlfriend, Tamara, is figuring out how to become a better business person, how to run my business from the outside and not being stuck in my business. Cause I've been doing it 4 years and it's great, but now I've hired people, three people. Right now I'm starting to create systems, and I'm understanding how important systems are to a business. And so I'm figuring all that out, and it's amazing, and it's super challenging, and there's definitely a roller coaster involved with it. And I mean, you know, you're a philanthropist, you're a business owner, and there's that roller coaster where you have these huge successes and then you have these troughs. And then when I first started, I started identifying the troughs were similar to the challenges I had in the military. Because after the trough, invariably there's going to be a peak. So don't ever, what I've told myself is in business, don't wallow in the troughs. The troughs are temporary, just like the peaks are temporary.
Well, don't get too high, don't get too low, man. You stay right in the middle, you're going to be okay. So what is the website where people can find these teas?
Yeah, just go to 30secondsout.com. And it's all letters, or you can type in 30secout. And we got some stuff on there that I don't really get political, and it's not my thing, or religious. It's just sort of commando military pop art.
Well, we're going to have to get Finding Your Summit tees on there.
Yeah.
So where can people find you?
You can contact me through 30secondsout.com.
Okay. And Facebook, are you on there?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook, Sean Evangelist on Facebook, and Instagram, 30 Seconds Out on Instagram.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, listen, it's been awesome to have you on the pod. The best part about this is that this buddy who I climbed with last year put us together, and, you know, it's a small town, so now I know my back is covered by the Warm Springs flank. And, you know, I look forward to growing our friendship more and skiing and hopefully you not rescuing me someday up on the mountain. Yes. But, you know, again, you know, I give you a full salute and full respect for serving this country and doing the things that you had to do.
Dude, it's awesome. I've never actually sat down and talked to an NFL player like this before. This is super awesome. Because when you do your thing, right, like you always think like the other thing is more amazing. I'm like, yeah, I was a SEAL, but that's old news. Like,
right.
I'm like, what you're doing is amazing. Like you played five seasons in the NFL, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
The average is 3.3, I think.
Well, something like that.
I mean, 3.3 years in the NFL is the average.
I don't even know if that's the average. I mean, it was like 1.5 for a while, and you have to go to 4 years in order to get your pension. So, I mean, it's a motivator, right?
Yeah.
So there's a tier that you have to get through to get to the other side.
That's impressive. That's inspiring to me.
So listen, appreciate it. Thank you so much. That's it. He is Sean Evangelista.
Thank you, guys.
Hey, and thank you so much for listening to the Find Your Summit podcast. We are so glad to have you along for this journey. And if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend, share it on iTunes, spread it to the planet. We're looking to broadcast this to every person that is out there because, as you know, everybody has their own summit that they're going after. Okay, if you're looking to follow my journey, you can find that through my social links on markpattisonnfl.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-K, Pattison, P-A-T-T-I-S-O-N, NFL.com. So, until the next podcast, just remember, clear eyes, full hearts, and remember, it takes a little more to make a champion, so make it happen. Thank you. Bye.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.